proposed is we sort of did not hear from the department as to their thoughts on this particular proposal. And if you would join us, if you wish, or up at the table or in the audience, whatever you prefer, and Commissioner, if you would like to complete what you were saying, since you were going to be talking on this specific subject. Assuming that that completed your presentation at this point. I understand. Yes. And I, this is not intended to be a debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the subject again is on the agenda that I was preparing a presentation on basically was disputed assessments. And I realize both from information that your staff provide the department and from yourself that one of the areas of interest for the committee is the proposal is laid on the Senate Bill 401. This is a bit of an awkward forum in which to discuss that, in that the committee does not have the bill in its possession right now. Further, some of the normal administrative steps you go through in analyzing legislation, such as a fiscal note and so forth, those things have not yet been done. So it's a little bit difficult to go directly on point. What I'd like to do, with the permission of the chair, though, is kind of let's talk about the audit process, try to cover the issues that were raised by the President of the Senate, and then give you a perspective on how the Department has been addressing those questions, and I'll try to do that in very short fashion. And I would like then to have Mr. Bill Floorsinger, who is the Director of the Audit and Gas Division and had to wrestle with these issues on a day-by-day basis, address the committee directly with his comments. So I'd like kind of like to do that. I'll give you a try to give you a quick overview. Mr. Chairman, I think that the President of the Senate referred to a common sense report that was generated in the beginning of 1987, and I discussed the analysis that the people were working on with the people from Common Sense, and I think the issues that they identified as far as the administrative process were basically correct. I mean, there some serious administrative problems have occurred, but most of those problems, insofar as I can see, are subject to a correction by efficient and vigorous administration of the program that we have on the books today. And so what we did in the department, and this administration has made this issue, both in the area of royalties and taxes, a priority. It's something we've put a special focus on. What we've done in the department, basically, first of all, is put some focus back on these specific tax questions, the separate accounting tax law from the prior years and the severance tax program, by reestablishing the Oil and Gas Audit Division, bringing in an experienced tax administrator, beefing up the staff there. Over the last year, we hired and trained 7 new auditors and 2 tax examiners. We've hired an additional computer specialist, another economist in the commissioner's office. The hearing staff was increased, and a senior hearing officer was appointed. In addition, in other areas, the Income and Excise Tax Audit Division was reorganized to improve the administration of the other tax areas. In the short term, the department's plan for reducing the number of cases in appeals includes a consolidation of a number of audit cycles into one case. It includes setting priorities and discussing those cases, by the way, with the taxpayers so that if there are substantiation issues, they can be resolved. We're setting priorities so that we can identify those precedent-setting issues. They can be promptly brought to decision to reduce the remaining arguments and appeals. In the midterm, you might say, we're looking at, in addition to increasing the staff there, we're looking at ways of using the information, a database the state has developed in the Amerada Hess royalty case. I mean, we're more than looking at it. We're actually looking at the information, and we intend to be using that information. We believe that can substantially reduce the time and effort needed to complete the audit cycles. And beyond that, we're implementing a system to gather tax data on a current basis by collecting it from the taxpayer immediately following the tax period. One of the administrative problems in the past has been they've had to go out after the close of a tax period and actually get the records from the company archives. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that the business estate was in. And to some degree, we're still in that, but we're not going to tolerate it. That can't be run. We can't run an effective audit program that way. And the funding for that effort is included in the start of that effort, it's included in the 89 budget request. In the longer run, we're looking at a way to determine the value of the oil for tax and royalty purposes on an ongoing and current basis so that the taxpayers would know the specific methodology that they're going to be facing in the application of the tax. There are other political jurisdictions that use that approach. It's a tax reference price and used by United Kingdom. Norway has a norm price that they use. And we're going to be looking at this spring at ways we might possibly incorporate that into our present law. It would give some certainty both the state and the companies. So that's kind of a quick overview of what we're doing. I'm going to touch on the goals that I have for this process and a couple of the basic fundamental or philosophic issues that were raised in the discussion. I'd like to ask Mr. Florsinger to comment on the specifics of the audit process and what he is doing with it and how the actual process that is being implemented in the department overcomes a number of problems that are on those charts. First of all, it seems to me a tax program needs to be accountable to the taxpayer and to the public. Now, we have a confidentiality law that prevents that accountability to the legislature. For example, I would actually invite Company X and Company Y and Company Z to waive their confidentiality rights under the law so we could discuss with this committee the specifics of these tax cases. And it's clear that not all the fault's on the side of the taxpayer, but I think that it would be an eye-opener for the committee to see if you could get the Company X and Company Y and Company Z to waive that confidentiality. Likewise,
Mr. Chairman, can we make that request?
Yeah. Likewise, Mr. Chairman, the company on handout 4, it might be interesting to look at that, although I suppose that people would see that as a side issue. Frankly, it is. But to be accountable. Secondly, the taxes should be efficient. We should collect what the law intends. Thirdly, that they should be fair. Taxpayers similarly situated should be paying tax on the same basis. And finally, of course, it's got to be timely. We've got to get the taxes in a reasonable period of time so that the taxpayer liability and uncertainty is removed and the state has the revenues in the Treasury. And those are the goals that we've set for that process. The Senate President touched on a kind of a basic issue in the administrative hearing process, and that is, can an agency be the prosecutor, the judge, and the jury, and do it fairly? Different legislatures and different parliamentary bodies have answered that question differently at different times on different issues. The Congress has, this legislature has. Madam President mentioned a tax study in the state of New York, which I, by the way, did review. The General Accounting Office did a review of the Internal Revenue system of making judgments in tax cases and recommended strongly that a non-court or non-judicial type of process be emphasized there because they thought it was more efficient and just as fair. Basically, as you know, Mr. Chairman, I think the other members of the committee are probably aware that our administrative hearing process, the theory behind it, doesn't just apply to taxes. It applies to anybody that's aggrieved by an administrative decision of a government agency in the state of Alaska. Basically, the drill is you complain, you get a hearing before the agency in which your due process rights are protected, and the agency is required to make a decision on the record that's built at that hearing, not bringing in a bunch of extraneous information elsewhere, but you get to know what the information is against you. The agency makes a decision. And if you think that's unfair, the safety valve is you go to court. And there's a couple of reasons for doing it that way. One reason is that the department that's carrying out the program should know what the issues are and be able to examine them and develop a record, a factual record, following reasonable procedures. They ought to be able to do that. And it's a lot more efficient to do that in an agency than in the court. The other reason for doing it is basically that there is a safety valve. If you don't like the way it was handled, you go to court and say, "Your Honor, I was robbed." The judge says, "You're right." Now, the court isn't restricted to looking at the due process question. They can also look to see if the decision was arbitrary and capricious and not based on the record. The court has whatever latitude it wants to ensure fairness. And so I'd say our process that we have right now can work. And I believe that, as far as I know, while people are saying that it may be unfair, I don't think that there are very many incidents on the record or even that I've ever heard of where people have alleged unfairness in the formal hearing process. The informal conference is a different deal. It's not a due process proceeding, and basically it's to try to get the facts out on the table. So I'd argue that going to a de novo review, particularly one in which the agency's ability to raise issues is severely limited, would probably substantially reduce the ability of the department to administer the tax laws and to achieve compliance. I'll stop my comments there because I know the committee is one of the concerns of the committee, just like to the taxpayers here, is how long does this take? I would like to have Mr. Floorsinger present some comments, and he has been reviewing this proposal in detail and sort of contrast it to how we see the program unfolding in the department and to correct some misperceptions. Some of the things, although I don't think all of them, but some of the things at least that the President of the Senate commented on were exactly right when this administration took office. And I think with the help of the legislature and with the help of the people in the department, those things are changing. And Mr. Floorsinger, who's been on the job a little over 6 months now, can give you some idea how.
Mr. Floorsinger, welcome. First of all, I'd like to welcome Representative Cotton, who's the co-chair of the House Resources Committee and will be considering legislation on this subject. And we appreciate his participation in this. And just for the information of the committee and the general public, we were not planning to have a specific hearing on Senate Bill 401. That was not our intent today, and I want that real clear on the record for everybody's information. We are concerned about all aspects of economic recovery, and when we have a large amount of back taxes that could provide a real infusion of cash to the state, that certainly is something that we should be cognizant of in a general way. And that was the purpose of the hearing today, and I hope and trust that the members and the members of the public who are here and Alaskans understand that. Again, welcome to Alaska and welcome to this hearing. The floor is yours.
Chairman, if I could make one comment on that. I agree with you. The committee needs and the legislature needs to know where they're going to get the bucks to do the things that are needed in the state. And I really like the idea that was advanced by one of the members of the committee that maybe after they get some sort of fair hearing that people ought to pay their taxes and apply for a refund. In fact, there is a model like that at the federal level where that process, I'll leave the table, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate this opportunity. couple of things that I'd like to comment on is where we're going with the Oil and Gas Audit Division at the present time. The commissioner has already talked about some of our goals and some of the things that we intend to do, and I've made an in-depth study of all of the cases that we have in process at this time in the appeals process, as well as those cases that are under audit going at this time. One comment that I would like to make in deference to Senator Fakes, in that the staffing levels are very, very critical in this kind of an audit program. Going back into the early years when we began the audit program, we had from 6 to 8 auditors. We had 22 taxpayers in which to audit. Of those, a substantial number of them are multinational corporations. So the audit process is a very, very lengthy process when you receive the records, when you get into seeing documents that you can look at and evaluate and so on. So the process for the staffing level, of course, is very critical at that time. If you do not have people who have expertise and training to look at the records when they obtain them, then the process must be lengthy. You take one at a time and you move on down the process. So that I think is very, very important. Now, taking the cases that we already have in process, we have something like 57 audit cycle cases. Now, I use the term audit cycle cases because we send our auditors out to audit a particular period of time. That is through, we make the proposal, then we go back for a subsequent period of time on the same taxpayer. So we have 57 cases. We're attempting now to consolidate those because the same issues appear in later years as they did in earlier years. That's one of the big areas in which I think we're going to speed up the process as it's been in the past, is get that the number of actual cases going into the appeals process collapse down to a manageable number. As we go forward into that, then, we're going to cut down or streamline those cases themselves because we have as many as 42 to 50 issues in each of those cases. We're attempting at this time, and the process is to sit down in an informal basis with the taxpayer, and we're already in that process with a number of them, to look at those issues and attempt to gain some informal agreement on those and get a written agreement that these issues are off the board. We're not going to go through the appeals process to hearing the court on those issues. And that's one of the things that we see at this present time in a number of the cases, that that's happening. We're able to cut down substantially the size of the case that will be heard in the formal hearing and in the courts. And that's working. The result of all of this process, and my goal is, and my best estimate at this time will be, that by the end of this calendar year, that at least 40% of the dollars that we have outstanding in accounts receivable will either be agreed to and paid or will be through the hearing process. And then it behooves the taxpayer then to take it into court. By the end of calendar 1989, I believe we'll be near 90% of the dollars that now sit rest in the accounts receivable will have been through the process. They will be agreed to and paid or will be appealed into the courts. So this in excess of $2 billion will be substantially out of the way. In addition to that, then, we are starting to, in our new audit cycles, to use a different technique in the audit approach. And the comment was made earlier, fishing expedition. We are establishing some very positive audit planning so that the auditors who go out there now will be directed to look for specific issues. I think we've pretty well identified everything that's in the cases, so that the actual time in audit will be reduced substantially. So I see the plan is working, as the commissioner has said, allowing the system as it is now. In a relatively short time, then we will be back within a reasonable length of time. One comment that I have concerning the proposed procedure that we have here. One of the things that was not discussed early on in today's comments was one part of the bill that does not show up in either of these charts here, and that is the process for obtaining the records and the documents to prove the facts in the case. Presently, we are attempting to work with the taxpayers to gain those. We're doing it on an informal basis, and this, the average length of time is somewhere in excess of 6 months from the time that we request the document to when we begin to get documents. Then it is dribbled out over a lengthy period of time. So that becomes a real problem in the audit process, attempting to keep it within the 3-year statute of limitations. The new bill provides for an appeal process in there in which the taxpayer may appeal the request, the initial request for documents for information. And that appeal process, to our best estimate, will take somewhere in excess of 300 days to get it into court to stop the statute of limitations, to toll it while it is going through the court process. So not only do we lose the time in attempting to get those, but the appeal process in gaining them, we lose another 300 days out of the statute of limitations period. The other process here, if you take them back up these days here, there are 300 days required in this process. Now, the statute of limitations is a total of 1,095 days from the time the tax return is filed until the statute tolls down here, until it runs out and no more assessments can be made. Putting these periods in there, first off, the production tax return is a monthly return. We certainly do not have staff, and I mean, there aren't buildings big enough to hold a staff to audit each monthly tax return separately. At the present time, the minimum number are 12. We wait until 12 monthly tax returns are filed, then we start the audit cycle on those. That takes 395 days out of the first statute period of the first return, waiting for 12 returns. So we lose 395 days from the statute just to the first request for records. Then the bill is proposed, has about 330 days in appeals process to give us the records. And then the required period of time that shows in here is a total of 300 days. That's 1,025 days that we lose out of the statute of limitations. Deducting that from 1,095 days, that leaves us approximately 70 days in which to audit a multinational corporation. I think it puts us in an untenable position, absolutely impossible to protect the state's interest, to arrive at a fair and equitable tax in which we're attempting to do for the corporations. So I find that some portions of the bill are could be done well, I mean, could do us a good service. But the process, as it is outlined in the new bill, would put us in a posture where audits could not be accomplished.
Sir, it seems to me that there are two basic issues here, put in its simplest terms. The department and the taxpayer, to some extent, are saying that the process takes too long. And secondly, and quite distinct and separate, is the taxpayer's argument that the process is unfair because in legal terms there is a bias and combination of functions. And those seem to me to be the two issues. Number one, takes too long. Number two, that the person who does it, who decides, is an employee and therefore it is unfair. But they're quite separate and distinct. Do you agree?
Yes.
I see those as the main issues. And with respect to speeding up the process, that could be done, and that problem could be dealt with quite separately from the other issue. And of course, the other issue could be dealt with quite separately from the procedure and speeding up the process.
Well, I think they're intertwined in that the requirement that these steps be held within the department become a part of the audit process too, because of the time factor. The loss in timing and so on. But the other part of it being that in a trial de novo under the bill as it sets at this point in time, that the department loses its opportunity to view and assess what certain documents mean to the tax process.
You're correct. But one question is who decides? And whether you have a judge deciding, or whether you have an employee of the department deciding, or whether you have an independent hearing officer deciding, that's irrelevant to the process itself. It's just person A versus person V versus person C. And I think we should look at those issues somewhat separately.
Chairman?
Yes.
I agree that you can look at those issues separately, but I think that one of the major concerns that has been expressed to me by the department staff, and I concur with it, normally don't apply the idea of fairness to the process that set out, if we were to follow it literally in the legislation, would basically mean that the taxpayer does not have an incentive to produce the information necessary for an assessment, and because they know they're going to be putting on their case in court. They know that. That's where the present law says the department will make the final decision. That's what it says. And so the taxpayer at least has the incentive as they close in on the formal hearing process, and I'm not saying that people need that spur, but it's there, to produce the information that they're going to use in their arguments, because that's the record. This changes that process, and it removes that tool that's built into our law right now that gives the department that information. So I think that they are intertwined. I do believe the issues can be separated, but for example, when you do separate them, you have to realize that the dynamics of the audit process are going to be affected by them, and consider those questions carefully.
I understand exactly. Representative Kopanen.
Would the tax collection process be simpler and quicker if we return to separate accounting?
Mr. Chairman, I think that the honest answer to that question is no, it's not. The separate accounting law is definitely more difficult to administer than the apportionment formula. We have a staff of auditors in Seattle that I can get in one room that administer that law, and while I think it needs more focus, there's a lot more issues that arise because of the way the tax is applied. I think it would be a more efficient mechanism for the revenues of the state government in spite of that, however, when it comes to resource extraction type taxes.
Thank you. With that, is there anything else you care to add at this point? Otherwise, I am prepared to adjourn for the day. Any other questions from any member of the committee? Hearing none. Yes,
Representative Clark. Is this going to continue?
We'll talk about that. I'm not sure how we'll proceed. I want to talk with you, and I want to talk with members of the committee and see what the members' pleasure is. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I just make a comment on it. I think that the administrative process can be subject to all sorts of difficulties. A lot of those difficulties are readily solved by applying proper administrative. I'm not saying there's any magic about it. People have to work harder. They have to focus in on an area. Have to realize its importance. I believe, at least it's self-serving to say it, but I believe that the department's certainly been going in that direction. And so I think that the administrative issues, some of the rise to these concerns, are shaking. There wouldn't be any discussion with the taxpayer or some sort of closing conference before an assessment is issued. I mean, it's a good business practice to do that, and that's something that Bill's incorporated in his audit program. But there have been times when that hasn't happened, and it's not the way to do business. Secondly, the fairness of the hearing process is sort of a myth right now because nobody has been hit. Nobody's running off saying this is unfair. That hasn't happened yet. So it's sort of a closet in the monster that people are complaining about, but nobody has seen. So I'm really wondering how much weight should be given to it.
Any other questions? Representative Copeland.
Just a comment. In the classes that I took at the Harvard B School, we never discussed management cases without an assessment of the resources available to carry out a given task and the appropriateness of those resources. So a simple model, just an outline, a procedural outline, is totally insufficient in my view to arrive at a meaningful solution of a problem.
Of course. Any other question or comment from anybody in the room? If not, the time is 5 minutes to 11. Thank you all. The meeting is adjourned.